The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to my Saturday afternoon program. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I'm aware this is a United States holiday weekend. Monday is Labor Day, and people are taking advantage of the three-day weekend to do a little traveling or indulging in some recreation or outings, etc. But like my guest, Bill Fink, I usually have a program for my scheduled dates, come hell or high water. So here I am, and here you are. We have a good number of listeners already on this holiday weekend, so I thank you, those of you who are here now, for being here. Bill Fink, in case you don't know or have forgotten, is the creator and webmaster of Christigenia.org, a Christian identity website, and all its affiliated sites. He's a man with a terrific work ethic and work capacity, of which I am one of the beneficiaries of that. And in fact, his radio programs are on Friday and Saturday nights. He has two, and he hasn't taken off for Labor Day weekend either, so he'll be doing his own show tonight along with making time to be with me this afternoon for the special topic of the ADL's aggressive campaign to censor from the Internet everything they don't like. Hello, Bill. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Carolyn. Thank you for having me.
You're a very welcome guest. And it's been a while since you've been on my program, and you haven't been on the White Network since we started it, so I'm glad that this worked out. I know you've been extremely busy, and you were traveling for a couple of months, and then you had to go home a little bit sooner because of basically, at bottom, the ADL, and basically at bottom, the Jewish mafia, who is trying to control everything and that anybody can say. And we know they want to control anything that we can say about them. So, but today I want to talk about you took care of all of that. You had a huge job, and you can talk about that a little bit. But you managed, and I was caught up in that, and you've done a wonderful job for me. You're continuing to put out your monthly magazine, which is called Saxon Messenger. And even though you had to get behind on it, and the July issue just came out. I think it's the July issue, and in it you have an editorial that kind of goes into what you've been through with this. Closing down this being what am I trying to say here? By having your servers not giving you service anymore and having to change all of that. So I want to talk about this article. It's called "The Demise of Free Speech on the Internet." But also, why don't you just introduce it in whatever way you'd like to?
Well, right. I had a 2-month trip around the South mostly, and visiting various friends and supporters, and I had to cut it a week short because I received a notice from 1&1 Internet, who was my internet service provider since I got on the internet in January of 2009, and I never really had a problem. I had a few small problems with them here and there, legal issues that they would contact me about, people complaining. But when you have 20,000 pages online, people are going to complain, right, about something. So, but it was nothing serious, and I kind of trusted 1&1 that there are other Christian, right-wing Christian websites, and there are some pretty virulently extremist left-wing websites hosted by 1&1, which I'm planning on going after this fall. And I'm going to go after 1&1 the same way the ADL went after my sites, right? And hope that that's at least a little effective in doing to the Jews what they've done to me.
Okay, I'm interested in this plan. We'll talk about this, I hope, before the hour is up. Because, you know, I've been trying to bring up an idea about a white man's ADL or what we can do, and that's exactly what I'd love to have some ideas about tonight. So this sounds very interesting.
Well, right. There's problems with the white nationalist and related movements that we could talk about. I mean, we could probably do three programs or four. That the but we have to do something. We have to show some kind of solidarity. White-minded peoples, no matter what, I don't care if they're tennis. I don't care if they're, you know, they don't all have to be Christian identity. They could be National Socialists, which I would fall into that camp as well, right? Mm-hmm. Or one of a variety of persuasions. But whites, yeah, you know, what we have is we have 50 million leaders and chiefs and no Indians, right? Well, everybody has their own ideas and they go in a different direction. We have no solidarity at all on anything because of the areas where we disagree. And this is one place we should have solidarity. It is the maintenance of our rights to free speech and free expression. And the ADL is now taken to bullying internet service providers into closing down Christian and other, I mean, Ernst Sundel was a victim of this, right? Sundel site was a victim of
this. Yes,
yes. Yeah, you know, and other white conscious websites. And we have to show some solidarity and get together some resources and combat this. We cannot let the ADL bully private companies into basically suppressing our rights to free speech. The ADL has taken, of course, this is an old problem, right? The ADL has appointed itself the sole arbiter of hate, to put it in somebody else's words. That they have, you know, they have basically a quasi-governmental appearance to them. Where people think that the ADL is in some sort of position of authority in order to be able to determine exactly what hate is, what hate speech is, and more importantly, what the bounds of free speech are. And we have a right to free speech not because the founding fathers wanted to protect nice speech. Nice speech doesn't need protection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we have to be able to express ourselves politically and religiously in a free yeah. An open society.
Politically, you know, politically. I mean, you know, to say you can't do political speech, I don't know how they cover that up, what they call it instead of political speech, but that's just not possible, especially in what's supposed to be a democracy.
Well, it's political speech and more importantly, it's religious expression. You know, I have a religious faith. I have to be able to express that faith. And if I'm merely quoting the Bible or talking about the Bible, well, which part of the Bible are you going to pretend to hate? Let's get out of the closet and just tell me that you're an anti-Christian, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. Of course, they're never going to do that. They claim to be upholding. They wrote this letter to a group, a whole, I don't know how many, but to at least three. GoDaddy, 1&1 Internet, and PowWeb, or actually to PowWeb's parent company, which also owns Bluehost and several other internet service providers. They wrote this letter to several of these companies in order to bully them, threaten them with inclusion in a report, and that basically amounts to bullying them to taking certain sites off the internet. And they would be mentioned in the report if the sites were still there at a certain time.
But, you know, that threat to include them in a report, just that's not going to really do anything. I think that's a kind of an empty threat. What could they actually do just because they make a report to? Who are they making the report to anyway? Where is this report going to go?
Well, exactly. And what authority do they have to publish such a report? You know,
go ahead.
It's the pretense. Yeah, you know, they have a list of officers down one side of the very official looking letter, right? And yeah. The officers have quasi governmental appearance to this letter, and the officers have fancy titles like Director of Civil Rights. Now, what is a private organization doing? You know, the ADL itself is basically a religious organization. That they were founded, that the group was founded by the B'nai B'rith, which is a Masonic lodge. The Banach Breath International is basically a Masonic lodge, and even Wikipedia admits that it was founded out of the Jewish Masonic lodges of the 19th century, and that's its background, and it's basically.
And it's supposed to be an arm. It's supposed to be an arm of the B'nai B'rith. I forget now what their job was, but
right. Well, basically, I'll tell you what their job is. They're the publicity front for the world's oldest crime ring. That's what their job is.
Well, right? Sure, but I bet what they call it.
That's not what they call it, but that's what they really are. That the B'nai B'rith is a secret society. The ADL is a private religious organization. It's a Jewish supremacist organization. And they because of their own self-promotion, they basically have an appearance of a quasi-governmental agency, and they take full advantage of that by appointing their board members and their employees with fancy titles such as Director of Cyber Hate Response and Director of Civil Rights, right? As if the ADL were the purveyor of civil rights. Fact that they're able to do those things, it's Jewish chutzpah. There's no doubt it's chutzpah.
Yes. Yes. Well, it is. It is. But, you know, the thing is, almost everything in this country anymore is run by Jews. And so they're able to make all this stuff possible with no opposition and no protest. That's the only answer to it, because none of it makes any sense, as you're pointing out. Who are they to make these decisions, and who are they to act like the police? And then they have all this, as people know, they have all this authority with the police, or they have all this credibility that they've built up. How does that happen? Well, I think it's Jewish police chiefs or something that allows it. It's just this huge network because they don't have any right to be doing anything that they're doing, but they're taken seriously, just like the SPLC. What is that? But they're taken seriously, and in the media, they're always quoted as being the experts on hate.
Well, that's because the media is run by Jews.
Well, there you go.
These organizations have been set up by Jews so that they could engineer the deflection of any criticism of Jews. The letter that they wrote to the internet service providers, the chutzpah in the letter, the effrontery in the letter can be summed up with the fact that they're seeking to close down websites in America, which is supposed to be the land of free speech, right? And one of the final clauses in the letter is their stated purpose to explore, to form partnerships with these internet service providers, right? To explore strategies to combat hate while still protecting free speech principles and avoiding legal regulation. As if the ADL can be the creator of legal regulation, which isn't really supposed to happen in this country, right?
Now they've managed to form actual government agencies that are overlooking hate, or certain, you know, that are going to protect us from hate speech and so on, like in the State Department and the Office of Combating Anti-Semitism throughout the world.
I know from personal experience, right? And my personal experience is on both sides of the coin, right? And I was involved in law enforcement for a long time, and I was a victim of law enforcement for a long time, right? That the ADL has actually set itself up to the point where they train law enforcement agencies, and I've seen this with my own eyes, on what hate is and on what religion is and on what is valid in religion, according to the ADL, and on what is not valid in religion, according to the ADL. So we have the Jews defining proper religion in this country today, and law enforcement agencies from the FBI all the way down to the county jail level are receiving this training from the ADL, which is that is absolutely.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. And, you know, nobody says anything.
So we have
the Jews. So it goes on.
We have the Jews defining what valid Christianity is on the inside and on the outside. It's incredible that people could buy into this. It's anti-Christianity at its finest. It's incredible to me. I can't phrase it in the proper terms. How boldface this is on the part of the Jews. Talk about chutzpah.
Yeah.
That they're defining Christianity now in the American law enforcement. It's incredible.
Well, you're right. You know, they do. They set themselves up as the one who defines it. In this art program I did a few weeks ago, I was making the point that they define what America is, what the values, what American values are. You know, the United States of America, what our values are. And they define that. And then they say, well, all this stuff is against our values. And we, the ADL, are upholding American values. And now you're pointing out how they do it with Christianity, too. They do it. They and what they're doing, why they want to censor free speech altogether, is that when they, you know, the end goal is when they say something, everybody has to accept it, and there can be no question about it. If the Jews have said this is the final word on this or that, and you can't question it, that's where they're going. And I know you're very aware of that. You've made some comments to that. To that point in your program last night, the beginning.
Well, right. We have to stand up to the ADL. We have to inform internet service providers that we're not going to accept their kowtowing to the ADL in the definition of what acceptable speech is. Acceptable religious speech, acceptable political speech. The ADL does not have a position of authority to define the boundaries of our speech. The ADL is a religious organization that has they have horses running in a race, right? That they're a religious organization that has an interest in the outcome of the debate that they are attempting to orchestrate.
Yeah, very true. You made something that really struck home. I think it's kind of not a pleasant image, but you're telling your listeners that if they didn't start standing up to this and start passing this information around and passing these articles around and doing much more than, you know, doing as much as they possibly could to wake people up, you said you're going to find yourself standing with your pants down around your knees and a Jew behind you. It's just a horrible
right.
thought.
For bed, I think I said, right? And that's exactly what is going on. It's exactly what is going on, and it's the best way that I could describe it and be frank and open about it. And it's kind of like a slap in the head. I understand that, but that's the
Well, I think that's what we need. I mean, we need to scare people. People are so
What we need is active listeners, right? I mean, we're out here every day putting our noses to the grindstone, doing the research that we need to do, and presenting the information that we feel needs to be before the American people, and that's why we do this. Christogenia.org is a one-man operation.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of part-time volunteers. But I do everything I can to produce the programs and the content that I do. I can't be my own marketing arm also. Yeah, you know, I mean, I do real good on Google search engines. I get over 700 visitors a day to my websites. But that's not enough. I'm in the top 60,000 sites in the United States, right? And that's pretty good considering that half of the top 60,000 sites in the United States are porno sites and big media sites that I could never compete with.
Right.
But 700 people a day, even though that's great and it puts me at the top of the internet rankings, it's not enough. It's a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the ocean, more like it. You know, we need a lot more exposure than that for our message.
My response to that is that I think we're not going to get active people except a certain number that we call a cadre of people who really care. And then these people have to be, as you said, be activists, and they have to be spreading this stuff as much as they can. They have to do that part of the work.
Right.
You know,
I got to give Mike Penny some credit for trying to get listeners to our content and readers of our content to actually in turn be active themselves. And you don't have to get out and hand out a million pamphlets or call a million people or start your own websites. What you have to do is just post links to content that you think is useful in as many venues as you can, whether it be on Christian right or white nationalist venues, or even better, on mainstream venues. All of these websites, all of these mainstream news sites, they all have comment sections. And if you drop two or three comments a week, if you're a listener of Carolyn Yeager or William Fink, you drop two or three comments a week, and that would only take 10 minutes, and you might steer 40, 50, 100, 200 people to a website to see an article, to see a video, to hear a podcast. And that's a huge help.
That's right. You know, there's a lot of comment sections where it's good if people are really learning things and discussing important things, but there's a lot of them where they're just there all the time, saying things that aren't very, just fighting with each other, kind of. Doesn't get people too far, but you can't tell people what they should be doing. You never know what else they're doing or whatever. But, I want to talk about what you said earlier, what we can be doing, or is this it, what you just said?
Well, that's part of it. You know, that's part of it is that our listenership has to be a little more active in helping us by spreading news about our content, right?
Right.
I have some listeners. I mean, I just posted on my forum this morning my list of downloads for my podcast from August just to show people that I had 44,000 podcasts downloaded.
Well, we have a lot of listeners right now, Bill, for this program, this Saturday afternoon program. Doing very well, keeps moving up. So people like what we're saying. The thing is that, people want to hear this kind of thing, and they want to hear tough talk too. They don't want to hear watered down stuff. It can be interesting. You know, I mean, interviews and so on with this about this and that thing can be interesting, but it's not what really gets people roused up. And for that, you need some more cutting-edge type material and conversation, I think.
Well, yes, you do. But we also have to inform people of what's going on when we try to produce cutting-edge material, right?
Well, speaking about people helping, you know, I've had in the past really nice people. I don't even know them, but I recognize some of their internet names, but they take my programs and they put them on YouTube and add a few images or something, get it out that way. But I think links are great too. And like you said, if you just as many places as you can link something, if you're really a fan of somebody, if you're a fan of my programs or a fan of your programs or whatever, to just, you know, really concentrate on doing that.
The links are important because the links lead to search engine exposure. Right. When ChrisTegenia.org was getting 200 visitors a day the first year I started it, it was only getting about 10% of that traffic from search engines. And now ChrisTegenia.org is getting 700 visitors a day, and half of that traffic comes from search engines. And a lot of that contribution is because people have linked my site, have linked my articles, so they finish higher in the search engine rankings. I do what I can with search engine optimization of my web pages. But the links are very important because they help my site show up higher in search engines.
Okay, very good.
The Jews do. The Jews are experts at all that, right? And they have organizations like the Jewish Defense League, they have a Jewish internet organization where they get volunteers from all over the world to sit in comment sections on mainstream media sites and post pro-Jew comments and rag and troll anti-Jew or anti-Semitic, they like to call it, comments. You know, they have all these volunteers that do these things. And even if only a small portion of their volunteers are actually productive, that they are fervent about what they do. And we need the same energy funneled where all of the various white nationalist and Christian groups need to stop, you know, beating their own chests and denouncing each other and start actually focusing on the enemies of our folk and doing something about them and confronting them.
It's probably a lot of these trolls that are in the comment sections that damp down the enthusiasm of people by constantly this naysaying about having just one way or another. You know, if somebody writes a comment or something that's a good person, you know, as someone who wants to take a strong stand about something, they'll write right away about what's wrong with what that person said and why it doesn't work, and they'll, you know, to me that's a sign, unless it's a real nut person that's talking. But this constant criticism, and you know, I'm a big critic, but it's a different kind of criticism. It's not based in anything. They never really say anything. They're just going round and round. That's the thing you need to look for.
Well, right. That's the fault of a lot of white nationalists, is that they're eager to engage and argue with the trolls, thinking that they could convince the trolls.
That's true too.
You know, and the trolls are never going to be on our side. And trolls, and people who attempt to foist universalism upon us, people that try to divide the Jewish argument between the Jewish problem and the Zionist problem, because we had a Jewish problem for 7 millennia before we had a Zionist problem, right?
Yeah.
We had a Jewish problem for 7,000 years before we had a problem with that little patch of land in 1945, right? Or if you want to wind it back to 1913, that's fine too. Or Theodore Herzl.
Speaking of Theodore Herzl, yeah, we brought out in the last International Jew Study Hour program that the Jewish program, the Jewish World Program, has with Theodore Herzl became the Zionist program. So now it's called the Zionist program. Called the Zionist program, but it's the same old program.
Right, it is the same old program. We've had a Jewish problem for 7,000 years before we had Theodore Herzl.
Right.
No doubt, just look at history, go back, look at the pogroms in the Middle Ages, go back to the time of Christ and the problems with the Edomite Jews at that time, and before the time of the Maccabees, they were called Canaanites, right? And they've been around for 5,000 years before that. We've always had a problem with these people. They morph themselves into other groups. They infiltrate other nations and corrupt them and assume the identity of those nations, just like they've done it today with America. Okay,
yeah.
Did it 2,000 years ago with Judea, just like they've done it today with America. And today, American foreign policy is Jewish foreign policy. The same thing happened 2,000 years ago in Judea. We've had a problem with these people since the dawn of time, and we can't allow ourselves, white nationalists have allowed themselves too long to argue over little inaccuracies in history or you know, and to assume that there are good Jews. But when Jews have been evil throughout all generations, they've been contrary to all men throughout all generations, we've always had problems with these people. We need to marginalize them. We need to marginalize the trolls. We need to stop feeding the trolls. We need to basically ignore them, and then their voice will be diminished and our time can be put to better uses. So white nationalists need a lot of waking up and focusing to do on the real problem.
And discipline. You know, discipline, because we fall into doing things that if you're listening to what you just said, say, okay, that's right, that's what I should do. And then you fall back into your same old habits. And then we have this seemingly inability. I don't have that inability anymore. Mostly. But a lot of people have it pretty bad, white nationalists, where they don't want to cut the thing right at the Jews and say, Jews out. That's it. Jews out, you know?
Well,
they don't want to do that.
Right. It can't be white nationalists. Another problem, like the Henry Mackows and Nathaniel Kapner, he's just a circus clown. Well, what we have, another problem white nationalists need to address, if we're going to have any voice on the internet, But because that they could pick on Chris DeGenia now, because I'm only one man, right? And they could pick on Pro Thing. Chris DeGenia is a huge website, but it's only one man. And they could pick on ProThink, and that's a pretty big website, but it's only one man. And we don't have the resources to fight them. But what we need to do is we need to find, and you've mentioned this, and I would phrase it a little differently, we need to find a vehicle where we could pool our interests and have a larger, create a larger voice, and in that vehicle we can only put the things that we agree upon. Yeah, you know what I mean? And set our differences aside while we're in that vehicle. And then we have to give that vehicle a face, alright? And a presence on the internet or in the public arena somewhere. And before white nationalists can do that, they have to agree on what white is and on what Jews are. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Okay.
Well,
we certainly know we can certainly come to agreements that we don't want our freedom on the internet to be brought to an end. So that's one agreement we can certainly come to, right? I mean, all those kinds of agreements. And anybody with any honesty can look and see who's behind trying to prevent that.
Well, we need that common face, and we need that common presence and that modicum of agreement so that we can combat organizations like the ADL, so that we publish our letters and send them to internet service providers. So that, because it might be ProThink today, it might be Chris DeGenia today, and we're having a hard time. Well, hopefully we're past that for a while, and I'll never end the battle, and I'll never let them take my sights down. But tomorrow it's going to be organizations like the Family Research Council. It's going to be organizations like the Cato Institute that the ADL is going after, and other, you know, sort of semi-right organizations. So that there is no Christian voice left in the public arena at all. Because the ADL, those Jew bastards, would love to wipe Christianity and to wipe, yeah, you know, most white nationalism, especially National Socialism, out of the public arena totally.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why I think some of the more moderate white nationalists, they think the best tactic, it appears to me, I mean, I'm not in their head and I'm not in their councils, but it appears to me that they think the way to go is to avoid the more extreme things that the ADL really hates, like a Holocaust denial. And like Christian identity and Christianity, certain forms of, you know, I don't want to use the word extreme, do I?
And that's really cowardly thinking. That's really cowardly thinking.
Yes, it is. It is. And yet they do a lot, and there's some quite respected people doing this, but there's some that aren't, I don't respect. But there's a movement in that direction in order to protect themselves so they can keep doing what they're doing. But that's not going to do us any good. We have to fight for our freedom, like you say, with a common face for all of us. And we can't say, well, you guys can be put shut down. That's very similar to that thing. They came for this and I wasn't that, and finally they came for me. I mean,
I've read 7,000 years of history. I don't know anybody who's ever won a war compromising half the battles to the enemy.
Yeah. Well,
you don't compromise. You don't compromise the truth. I'm never going to compromise the truth. And anybody that tries to cede the losses of millions of Jews in Germany to the Jews when it's not the truth. And anybody who wants to give the Jews anything for the sake of trying to win the other half of the argument is sadly deceived.
Well, what do we say? I mean, you know, there are people who think they're not compromising. That's just how they want to go about their, you know, their efforts. That's how they want to do it. Well, you can't stop them. I mean, they're doing something, but there's a lot of this attitude. Oh, I hear it all the time. Well, like, say, speaking about Amarin, which is totally won't go after anything, go after the Jew. Well, but they're doing some good, and they talk about the black problem, and they, you know, and they're a gateway, and they're this and they're that. Well, you can't change what they are, But if we're going to have, succeed in having an organization with a common face where everybody who got involved in that would, well, let's just see. Could everybody get involved with that as long as they agreed with the, with certain basic principles?
Well, right. It's hard. It's hard to draw a line on where you want to negotiate certain beliefs, but you have to have a shared core principle. You have to have a set of shared core principles. For instance, I'll give you an example. I talk to Severus Niffelsen all the time. I consider him a good friend. He's on my chat server several times a week. We've had hundreds of discussions about political philosophy and things along those lines, religion, Christianity, Judaism. We've had hundreds of discussions that would have probably made a great podcast series over the years if we'd ever recorded them. But he's not Christian Identity. He has some beliefs that I don't subscribe to. And we leave them at the door, and we have some pretty productive conversations and come up with a lot of productive points that help edify us, but we leave our differences at the door when we have those discussions. And so I'm just saying, here's a white nationalist that I get along with just fine. He's a very intelligent man, so he can determine what has to be left at the door, you know, because he knows me well. So we have maybe 80% of our ground is common ground, and we can meet there anytime we want and agree and have some productive, edifying discussions and come to conclusions and decisions based upon that. And that's what we have to do. We have those core values of what is white, of what is Christian, and what we can share those ideas. And even where we disagree, what we just leave those disagreements outside because we know we're not going to convince one another concerning the
disagreement. Yeah. And you know, well, I'm not Christian Identity either, but I'm certainly a lot more sympathetic toward it than I used to be. But, I get along fine with you and other Christian Identists who I like very much and who've been very nice to me. So, you know, I'm so opposed to this anti-Christian idea that, you know, these people are on the wrong. They're going after the wrong group. You know, they shouldn't be doing that. They should just be going after our real enemy. But they've convinced themselves that Christianity is the enemy. See, and there's not much you can do with people like that. But this this organization that we should have with the vehicle that to pool our interests that everybody can agree to and that everybody would contribute to and we would put some power into it. What more can you say about that? How would we go about?
I summed up my own ideas on Christianity and nationalism, which would help for anybody who's actually listening to this podcast, in my June Saxon Messenger editorial.
Oh, okay.
A short article called Christianity is Nationalism, right?
Oh, I saw that.
And that's from the Christian Identist, you know, from the Identity Christian's perspective and on what how Christian Identity should fit into the nationalist picture. Now, of course, people outside of Christian Identity would look at the article and think that it was pretentious. But if they look at the effect that it has and how it's put into practice rather than on my philosophy of pulling people to where I am, well then in effect that they can't really criticize it, right? In effect, in practice, because that's how we should all act. It is loving our fellow white man and trying to convince him of coming to our ground by promoting our good ideas and our edifying ideas, and eventually the person who edifies the most, his philosophy will become the prevailing philosophy, right? Which is how Christianity subsumed Europe 2,000 years ago.
Okay, well let's just look at the organization, which wouldn't be Christian or non-Christian or anything like that. It would be we are going to stand up against this shutting us down and shutting us up, all of us, no matter what, you know, no matter who it is, we agree on this. How would we go about reaching all the people that need to be reached and bringing them into this? Or who, I was able to see that a few people would agree to make this a project of theirs, and they would start out, they would discuss it, and then they would, you know, start out contacting others and putting forth the ideas that way that they see it working. That's the only way I could see it ever getting started.
First, we have to have a clearly defined purpose, right? And the purpose would be to combat the aggression of organizations like the ADL in attempting to shut down free speech on the internet. Now, I know that there are free speech on the internet groups out there already. Most of them are sort of left-wing groups. I haven't really investigated them very well or investigated who is behind them. If there was a Jew involved, I would stay away from them anyway, and I'm sure there are Jews involved, right? Like the Electronic Freedom Frontier and things like that. And I remember them from the 90s. But we have to have a clearly defined purpose and limit any umbrella organization or any association to that specifically and clearly defined purpose. And then we can enlist people who would help lend the weight of their organization or of their cause to that purpose and allow us to use their names and to formulate doctrines that help in the forwarding of that purpose, that help in spreading that purpose and in giving us a voice that is at least on a par with the voice of the SPLC and the ADL and groups like that.
People would have to be willing to stand up against shutting up what's called Holocaust denial. You know, a lot of people will say, okay, I'm all for free speech, but then they'll go along with that. Well, we shouldn't talk about that.
Oh, right, and here's the principle. Here's you know how I could encapsulate the principle of free speech and our rights of speech, right, and the importance of them. The founding fathers of this nation believed that those rights, which they enumerated in the Bill of Rights, which they did the best they could to enumerate, and there's some rights like the right to association that they left out, that were taken for granted in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. These rights were taken for granted. Men expected them in the right to free association and things like that. But those rights, they believed, came from God. And if you believe, I don't care if you're an atheist or not, if you're an atheist, you're an idiot, but I don't care if you're an atheist or not, if you believe your rights came from God, that your rights came from a higher moral authority than man, then you have to believe that those rights are inalienable. In other words, you cannot be separated from those rights. No man can separate you from that right because it was given by a moral authority higher than man. That's the idea that the founding fathers of this nation had when they codified the Bill of Rights. Those rights came from God, therefore government cannot take them away.
Well, that's why they want to get rid of religion, and they want to get rid of Christianity in particular, because they don't want that idea that you have things from God. And, you know, I understand the intellectual arguments against that, and there can be very tempting. And people who talk about reason, well, let's reason this out. Well, you know, the truth is, that's where the sneaky trickery comes in, and the legal tricks and so on, when you're depending on reason and people being reasonable.
Well,
that's why religion is a more powerful tool for making people stand up for things that they think are part of their religion.
That's the fault of the U.S. Constitution, and it's the fault of liberal systems of government. It's the flaw of liberalism is that it cannot defend itself from those who would usurp it from within by using its own values against it. And that's the American.
Well, that's just the same. You could use that democracy in the same way, couldn't you?
Well, yes, you can.
Democracy can't defend itself.
You know, the idea of democracy is liberalism, right? Liberalism based on democracy, right?
Okay.
It does not defend itself from those who would use its own values against it. It has no mechanism for that defense, right? Which is why Adolf Hitler and other great minds, great fascist minds, that's why they despised democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. Well, what could you say instead of religion or instead of Christianity that would be a powerful argument for people that would, well, you know, you're saying it comes from God. Well, you're saying it's inherent that we own this liberty and this freedom, these rights. I don't know. You know, it gets complex trying to.
Well, it does, but I can't formulate the atheist argument in defense of our rights because atheism has never defended our rights. Atheism has never defended our race. Atheism.
I think there are atheists who do, but I don't know that they don't have to base it on some particular whole thesis.
The flaw to atheism is that there's no, again, it goes back to morals. You cannot separate morality from life. I'm sorry. It can't be done. People have been trying. The Jew has been trying to do it for 7,000 years, and it can't be done, Carolyn. In an atheistic system, there is no moral standing for racism. There is no moral standing against the evils of the Jew and against immorality itself. Atheism fails as a mechanism through which race and society can be defended.
Well, I like Hitler's National Socialism based on nature's laws and based on a God called Providence and so on. And he was, you know, comfortable with the people being having their Christian religion and so on. But he said he was that himself many times. But I think basically, it was the racialist idea that your people, that your survival as a people and your distinct race and peoplehood, your distinct nationhood, was what you needed to have that kind of allegiance to, because that's the only way you were going to continue to exist. So it's kind of based on existence, which nature's laws have provided that everything continues to exist that follows its laws, and that's kind of we can see that throughout the ages. So that can kind of take the place of it, I think.
Yeah, you know, the founders used the term providence also, and the American founders, and most of them were Christian, right? And I have much research on Christianity that proves mm-hmm. that. And Adolf Hitler also, his God was the God of creation. The pinnacle of the pinnacle of that God's creation was the Aryan man, or what Christian identists would call the Adamic man, right?
Yeah.
It's the paradigm that he used to frame his beliefs in Mein Kampf is actually the same paradigm that I would use to frame my beliefs.
Well, I know, Bill. I know. And I don't want to stop you from saying that, but the fact is, first we were talking about something that everybody could get behind, and so it has to be where people don't have to adopt Christian ideas.
I'm just trying to show the common ground between National Socialist and identity.
Yeah, I know that. There's a ton of stuff that can be said, but I'm just saying that, you know, people can have this strong feeling about something without it stemming from a quote religion unquote,
evolution cannot defend race. I've been through this. I've been through this with the adherents to the World Church of the Creator who believe in evolution. That they've had debates with me. They've gained no ground on me. That's for sure. That they try to use evolution in order to defend racial characteristics, and it's a seriously flawed argument. I've seen atheists try to defend racism, and they fail because when it all boils down to it, there is no moral grounds for their beliefs.
Well, they might fail to you, but if they believe it strongly, well, then that's, you know, that satisfies them. And I think that people can believe it strongly, apart from what you were saying. But this all gets down into all these personal differences and what people are attracted to and what they're not.
Well, right, and that's because we need a simple, clear message with a small set of core principles in order to form a common defense against organizations like the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center. And white nationalism has failed to do that.
Yes, it has.
We have to make sure we have to, if we want a voice in 2, 3, 4 years down the road, if we want a voice on the internet, if we want a voice in the public arena, if we want to maintain our rights to free speech, we better stand up for them. We better not let the ADL get away with bullying a few internet service providers into dumping a few dozen websites off the internet just because it's not my website.
That's right. And, you know, people are protecting their own and they don't really care. And that's why they're moving away from the pure truth and taking less courageous positions. So, but here, you know, it's interesting in these agreements with the web hosting companies. Now, you have in here how they say that your responsibility, our responsibility as website owners is that we can't constitute or contain or link to material which is libelous, slanderous, defamatory, or which will violate or infringe upon. And this, I'm saying this because they also say that they don't interfere with any content on your website. You know, that's another part of this agreement. They say that, you know, they don't engage in any monitoring of your data and they're not going to exercise any control over information which is found. But at the same time now, so how does the ADL get around this? Well, I found it real interesting that you looked up the meanings of libel, slander, and defamation.
Well, right. In the ADL letter, they did not point out any specific content which consisted of libel or slander or calumny or any of that, right? They pointed out no specific content to these ISPs at all.
Yeah.
When 1&1 Internet contacted me, they would not produce an actual complaint. They only used very general language, and their letter is reproduced in my editorial. They only used very general language about unspecified complaints and unspecific violations of their supposed terms of service agreement. Now, ChrisDeGhenia.org has 20,000 pages online, and I would bet that not one of those pages actually violates any of 1&1's terms of service agreement. Except that they didn't want to appear in an ADL report. That's what it boils down to.
This is kind of nutty because they don't have to point out what it is
right
that they're accusing you of. Well, and you've got 20,000 pages, so you're supposed to go through and prove that on every one of them, ask them to point out what's wrong there and that you don't have the money to do that. It's all set up against us, but it's not, they're not following their own rules, are they?
Well, no, they didn't follow their own rules, and they can't show me where my infraction was, if indeed I had an infraction. I'm sure I did not have an infraction. You cannot, you know, telling the truth about the Bible and history, which my website purports to do, and which several other websites which I sponsor purport to do, or which I host purport to do, telling the truth about the Bible and history, if you believe it's the truth, and if you have citations and things like that, it cannot be considered defamation. It cannot be considered slander. If we say that the Catholics were responsible for the Inquisition, how could that be slander or defamation when most whites happen to accept that as true, right? And history clearly shows it to be true. And even if it were questionable, 1&1 has a clause in their terms of service agreement stating that there would be no subjective editorial control over your website by 1&1. The bottom line is that we have slandered nobody, but the ADL has bullied the internet service providers into thinking that we have, and their name and their reputation is bigger than the substance of the charge.
And if we had something that could, with a lot of us standing behind it, could go up against that and write to 1&1 and put up something of a battle. It wouldn't have to be in the courts. Just, you know, just doing it through having enough people behind the idea that 1&1 is out of behaving in a way that.
Symbols. There's a lot of power in symbols. There's a lot of power in a name, and we need to create that. Well, we need to create that for ourselves in white interests so that we can battle the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center. There's no doubt we need that. We don't have it.
Okay, well, we need to keep working on this. I'm really glad that you moved this forward in my own mind. We've only got a minute left, Bill. I want to thank you so much. I've got some other things I'm going to talk about, I promise to talk about, in the second hour. I would just ask you if you could stay on, but I know you're also real busy. But I think we covered a lot that was good, a little bit different than what I was expecting, but it's better. So, I want to thank you. Do you have any final signing-off words here for our listeners?
Well, like you said, like you quoted my podcast last night when I spoke about this, if white people don't stand up for their rights and stand against the ADL, the ADL is going to be raping them in no time at all. And it's already going on because we haven't stood up for our rights. But they will be standing behind our backs and we will have our pants around our ankles.
Yeah, and this will be literal because they're already raping us, you know, it could be so much worse. And, that's what we're going to leave our listeners with in this first hour. So thanks a lot, Bill, and Godspeed.
Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while? Need the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you are only 19 when you joined the Great Fallen in 1916. I hope you died well and I hope you died clean. Our young Willie McBride was it slow and obscene. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did you leave it a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. Although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name? Enclose them forever behind the glass frame. In an old photograph, torn, battered and stained, and faded to yellow in the brown leather frame. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did I sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? And did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun, now it shines on the green fields of France. There's a warm summer breeze that makes the red poppies dance. And look how the sun shines from under the clouds. There's no gas, no barbed wire, there's no gun firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses stand mute in the sand. To man's blind indifference, to his fellow man, to all generation that were butchered and damned. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as he lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the fall? A young Willie, my bride, I can't help wonder why. To those that lie here, know why did they die? And did they believe when they answered the call? Did they really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the sorrow, the suffering, the glory, the pain, the killing and dying were all done in vain. For young Willie McBride, it all happened again and again and again and again and again. Did they beat the drums?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the second hour of Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager, and I am still got all my listeners, so I know that you're interested in what this second hour is going to be about. And there is rightly a lot of interest on about the Voice of Reason radio network, and it's a strange ending, and what I don't know if it's ended. I really am not at all convinced that it's ended, that it won't come back. I'm not convinced of that. But when I say ending, I mean that it just stopped posting anything. Well, it hadn't been posting, but it stopped giving any updates. And then the person who had become in recent years, or maybe 2-3 years, 2 years, not even that much, but the sole operator of the network quit speaking to anyone, and this was very strange. And so lots of things were being said. This I'm talking about Mike Connor, of course, and lots of things were being said by people who are interested in fans of Voice of Reason and fans of the Friday show and so on, and they were speculating. And you know, people get to speculating. And they use their own favorite little ideas about who they like and who they don't like to speculate with. And so a lot of stuff was being said then. But I made a few comments on my programs. And Tan Stoffel and I had considered a couple weeks ago of writing our own, what would I call it? Well, we were going to put it in a blog. We were going to say our own account of what actually really happened as far as we were concerned, because there was a various and assorted pointing, not only at me and also at the White Network, and it included, sometimes Tan Stoffel was included in that, as being somehow at fault for what was taking place there and what happened and for why Mike was unable to continue. So, after I wrote my part, I thought, well, the next day I looked at it and I thought, this is, you know, I've said all this before, and this just sounds like almost like I'm trying to get attention, or we're trying to, you know, keep this thing going. And I said that to Tan, and he said, good, let's not do it then. So we thought, you know, you'd think that these things are going to kind of blow over. But what got me to decide to talk about it today and to say some things and give out some information from my own experience at Voice of Reason that I wasn't going to bring up in any big way, because I don't want to be accused of trying to make people look bad or trying to do what actually they've been doing to me. I don't want to, be in the middle of all this as though it's being said by some that I love it and I want to do it and I want to stir all this stuff up. What I want to do, as I've said before, is tell the truth. And now I'm going to have to tell the truth about what I know about Voice of Reason and Mike Connor too. And I was at Voice of Reason for 2 years and about 2 or 3 months. So that's the only part I know about. I only know from what I experienced myself, but I don't know from before that. I know nothing about how it got started. There's always been a lot of talk about how it got started, who started it, and why people left. And, a lot of things that I knew weren't true, because I knew some of the people well enough by then that I knew they weren't. And the way things go on these radio networks, that it wasn't that people were being fired and one person was kicking the other person out and all this. Generally, people just got unhappy for one reason or another and left. And that's exactly what happened with me. I became unhappy and to the point that I just didn't want to stay there anymore. And I'm going to explain that when I get to it. So the reason, though, as I started to say that I decided to talk about this today was some comments, and I'm going to have to name some names here. There's no way around it. Some comments that have been made on countercurrents, and that have been posted over at VNN forum too, and some of the comments just originated at VNN, but mostly and I know there's a thing now that's developed between Greg Johnson and I, and I know that I started, if you want to say I started it, with my criticism of homosexuality, and he played a role in that program because I learned a lot from going to articles that he had written about homosexuality and being very friendly toward it, as far as being should not be homosexual, should not be excluded from white nationalism, and they have a lot to offer, and all this stuff, that I talked about in that program. So, I couldn't quite agree with that, but I just quoted. I've always quoted what Greg Johnson has said or written. And I'm going to be doing that this afternoon, and I've always done that. I go to, you don't have to do it anymore. I don't just call people names. If I have, I'm sorry. I may have used some maybe looser language than I should have the basic things I'm saying are always come directly from them. So all right, so Greg Johnson on 2 days ago. Was writing. He announced that Countercurrents is going to be starting up a podcast network of its own, and in the meantime, it's going to be putting on some of the VOR podcasts that didn't ever get posted at VOR. I don't know where it gets them. Maybe from the hosts have them, and that it was going to include all these VOR hosts in its new podcast network and so on. And it was kind of like Countercurrents coming to the rescue. And, of course, Countercurrents is Greg Johnson. So Greg Johnson is coming to the rescue of Voice of Reason. And I have already said that I don't know what gives him the right to think he's the one that should do that, or that he should, take over all this, all the archive, try to rebuild the archives of Voice of Reason. Why is he the one to do it? Is that anybody at Voice of Reason who still would have some authority there giving him that right? Well, obviously he wasn't given the archives. So, it's my feeling that Mike Connor is still has those. He's still in control of that. He wouldn't have just let it all disappear. I don't think. I mean, the Mike Connor that I know can do some strange things, but I don't think he would do that. Now, if he would, then he's somebody beyond what I think myself. I mean, he's got problems beyond what I already think he has. But I questioned that right there. But this is not going in the direction I wanted to. So, but there are people who are praising Greg Johnson for what he's doing, but I see it a little bit differently. I'm sure that it's not all lost, and you need to give it a little bit of time and wait and see. But there may be things I don't know. Anyway, Greg wrote that Mike Connor last updated the site on June 16th. This was in response to somebody who said, well, what's going on and what happened at VOR, do you know? So Greg answered this. He said the last any host heard from him was early August. Whether he took down the site himself or just let its hosting lapse is not known. Then he says, I noticed that Mike Connor was showing signs of burnout back in June. I don't know that it was burnout. And there is no question that he felt angry with Carolyn Yeager and personally betrayed by Tanstaffel. Now, this is so obviously an unnecessary dig by somebody who doesn't know really the cause of what Mike Connor has done and his shutdown that he's going through. But he has been anxious, as a few others over there at VOR that hang out around the Friday show feel, to say that it's all because of me, which I think is really shows... Oh, it doesn't say much for Mike Connor if he can get so angry that he can shut down his own network that he ostensibly was the most important thing that there was to him. And he had so much pride in it and so much concern for it. And he didn't want it ever to look bad. And so that's why he was angry at me, because he thought I was being critical of Voice of Reason and in a way that he really upset him. It's true, but it made him angry than he was so upset. And he was going to, he did a few things about that, which I'm going to bring up. But this is kind of thin, and it doesn't say much, as I say, for these people, if they can be brought down so quickly. And to be betrayed by Tanstaffel, that's the first time Greg Johnson has brought up Tan into this. And I think it's really shows how Greg Johnson handles any kind of criticism of himself. He just doesn't handle it well. And he starts attacking people. He's attacked Hattie Scott and me in the past, which I've talked about on another program. And he's continued to do it. And now he's not going to be in it anymore. Now he's on his own, in his own comments here, he's bringing these things up. But then, Greg says, beyond that, perhaps, see, this is all speculation. He doesn't know. But he says, perhaps he did not feel sufficient support from his friends in this thing of ours. I guess he's meaning the entire movement. You know, Greg tried to bring Mike Connor and the VOR into his social circle via his conferences, his retreat conferences that he was holding twice a year. And the last one that he held, Mike and several VOR hosts were invited, and even I was invited, but I declined to go. Because I didn't have enough time to decide on it. But Mike was asked to be a speaker, and Mike was very, he didn't mention it to me until later. I told him that I was also invited. Then he talked to me about it, and he was very complimented, and he was very proud of the fact that these people that were like McDonald and Johnson and Mark, well, of course, Weber's already on the, is already a host, but whoever else he associated with that group thought so well of VOR. He said they really think highly of VOR. Well, you know, Greg Johnson was using VOR to do a lot of radio programs there, to be a guest and to have some of his other homosexual friends to be guests. And that's what I brought out in my programs. And I think I have a lot of support myself from people telling me that they're glad I'm doing it. They think it's very important. I should keep going, keep doing it. I just have a letter today in my email from somebody who I thought I might read it, but I want to make sure I get this other stuff in. You know, when I think, how am I going to fill up an hour with this? Already it's 15 minutes into it and I've barely gotten started. So I better get down to business. I wanted to mention those few things that Greg said. And then there are some people came on there and really tore into me, but you know, I've had that happen before. And Greg let those things on, particularly this person named Andrew. And I'm going to mention Andrew, who wrote a very strong, really rather nasty thing about Carolyn Yeager. And Greg said after he posted it and he said, "Thanks for your kind words about me regarding Carolyn Yeager. I agree with your general view, but I am approving your comment as an object lesson in what I don't want to get into here." So then he starts, you know, saying a bunch of terrible, you know, criticizing me himself about how I am somebody who's just disturbing and I'm destructive. I'm destructive to the movement and so on. But he says that he doesn't want that on there, but he's using all this as an object lesson. So then there's a few other things on there, but I will go next because I guess I might as well mention the rest of these things. Now, here's something typical. This is something that Don Pauly wrote on VNN Forum, which is they were posting some of this stuff from Countercurrents, these comments there. And so some of this shows up on this showed up on Countercurrents, but it was posted on Don Pauly on VNN first. He says, now, Don Pauly is not someone who would know what was going on at Voice of Reason, but he's obviously emailed Mike Connor in the past and gotten answers. Well, that's not unusual. So he says, "Mike Connor's two email addresses have not replied to messages from me in 2 months." This was just the other day he wrote this. "His cell phone number is no good either. Something has happened to him. He did a recent phone interview with April Gady, which was never posted on Voice of Reason. Something is going on." Well, this is the typical kind of stuff that you read as though he's in the know, and now he's assuming that something has happened. Other people have said, maybe Mike was murdered. Maybe Mike is dead. Maybe Mike has been kidnapped. And they go on and on. And then they were saying in the Friday Show group, "This is not like Mike to behave like this. And so something must have happened to him." But you know what? See, they don't know. This is like Mike. This is absolutely like Mike, which I will go into shortly. So this, naturally, on the internet and in forums and comment groups, you have people, at least Don Pauly gives his real name, but you have most of these people don't, and you have them saying things and acting like they know something or, you know, adding to the confusion. But the point I want to make is that they don't know Mike, and they don't know what was going on at Voice of Reason, and they don't know anything. And right away, it's a tendency to come to some big conspiracy, right? Something has happened to him, Pauly says. Something is going on. Okay, that's real helpful. Not. And then there's, now people are starting to attack Tan Stoffel, which I won't read that because it's kind of nasty. But this Carl Rattle, who is Carl Rattle? He also has been, they come on, so he's on VNN. They come on so strong and they say, extreme things, and that's okay. But if I talk in a reasonable way on my programs and back it up with facts and with quotes and I'm reading from what people have said and written and so on, and I have a point to make, that's not okay. That's what I'm trying to say. But, you know, are these people doing anything really positive in this regard? No. Let me keep going here. All right, this Andrew, I was going to say this Andrew, I didn't finish that. This Andrew who wrote that stuff to Greg, I believe that is Andrew Winkler. I'm going to say that because Andrew Winkler has a site called rebelnews.org. And it used to be an open site. Then he made it partially subscription. And now it appears to be, I hadn't even thought about him for a long time. It appears to be, totally subscription. And, he's supposed to be, the Zionist world, investigation site or something like that. But, Andrew and I got into it on a discussion group about his somebody started it out by talking about how he was always asking for money and then saying, if I don't get this certain amount of money, this website is going to close down. And that the deadline would come, he wouldn't get that huge amount of money he was after, and the website never closed down. And not more than a few days later, he started a new one. You know, a new fundraising thing, and said the same thing. If I don't get this amount of money, this website will close down. Somebody brought that up to him, and that got me looking at it and got me criticizing a lot of the way he went about his the stuff he put on his website and pretending that he was real anti-Zionist. But he was never anti-Jewish, and he was not he was questionable on revisionism, whereas he was tried to look like he was and did the simple things, but not didn't take it far enough or do the more difficult things. So he was very bitter when that discussion was over. And so I can imagine that this is the same Andrew, and this is why he's written all this stuff about what an imbecile I am and what an asinine witch hunt I pursue, and, you know, on and on like that. And I have to say that he says, contrasted with the objective and incisive analyses offered by the likes of Mark Weber's podcast or the good-spirited and informative conversations that Robert Stark brought us, she was the dreck at the bottom of VOR. As though he knows anything. You know, I had the most popular show on Voice of Reason. Mike finally admitted that to me after I found it out, you know, on my own. And then he said, oh, you found that out, did you? He was disappointed because he didn't want me to know that. That's kind of the attitude. Although Mike and I mostly got along real well. He liked my show. He wanted my show. He didn't want to lose my show. So it wasn't that he didn't like my show. He just didn't want me to get a big head. And he wanted to keep trying to push his other hosts and make it appear and not let me know that I was number one there. Andrew doesn't know what he's talking about either. That's kind of the point here. People are talking out of all kinds of reasons, but not because they know anything. So, I'm going to start now with, I'll say that what I've been saying is that surrounding what happened at Voice of Reason are a lot of false ideas. And I've kind of brought them down to three. Maybe I could bring them down to more than three, but that's all I had time for. So, the first false idea I'm going to put out there, and this is my, hopefully my final statement, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, this is what I'll point to when people come up with things, if they continue to do so in the future and say these things about me and my relationship with, at Voice of Reason and my relationship with Mike Connor. All right. The first false idea is that Carolyn jumped ship, or she left VOR somehow, you know, in some way, in shambles, or, you know, without dealing with it properly and upset the apple cart in some way. Well, this is only kind of implied in that I created such a problem for Voice of Reason. Actually, the problem was what I did afterwards. But anyway, I will address this because I think it's important. I want to. There's a joint statement. This was the thing that I had written. I don't know which to go to first. I guess I will go to that first. Let me find it. Okay. First, I'll say that, you know, there was trouble at VOR already is no secret at all. But this trouble wasn't anything that was growing bigger. It was just the same old trouble. The same old trouble that VOR basically was run by one person. One person who had to be there for everything to be done, had to show up, and sometimes he didn't show up. And when he didn't show up, things didn't happen, and programs weren't posted. Sometimes programs weren't able to be recorded, and it was on a kind of a hold. But in the past, it was always short enough time that it could have been over. People got over it, although people, while this was going on, were complaining a lot, and they would complain to me because they say, "Where's your program? It's not been posted," as though I could do something about it, you know. And I would tell them. But anyway, I got my that first happened to me in December 2010, and Mike Connor kind of went AWOL, or he went off. He wouldn't respond to anyone or do anything for about 2 or 3 weeks, and it was over Christmas time, so it wasn't so bad. But I was trying very hard to get hold of him and get him to respond to me, and he wouldn't do it, and he didn't respond to anybody. And that's at the time that, I think that was the time that, Mishko quit, or it might have been the second time that the following April or March, April, Easter time, in, 2011, he did the same thing, and for even a longer time. Oh, maybe that was a shorter time at the Easter time. I don't have any notes on that, but I know it happened, and that may have been when finally Mishko was so unhappy with Mike, and he quit, and he said, "You know, I'm done with this," and he told me that himself. He said, "I can't get Mike to do anything," and he said, "I can't fire him. I can't run this thing myself. I don't know how." See, Mike by then was the only one who knew how to operate everything. So he says, "I'm out of here." And he was. And he was gone for quite a while. Well, I thought about it, but I didn't have anywhere to go. So, and I never did want to lose my program. So both those times, I was highly tempted to also say goodbye, because I felt personally, talk about feeling personally betrayed by someone. I felt very betrayed, and I couldn't understand it. I couldn't make any sense out of it. But anyway, when Mike came back that second time, I think we had some bad words between each other, and he said that what really got to him was that he had to do all this editing on a particular program of mine. Well, the thing about editing in Mike is that he always wanted to edit the programs to make them better, and me wanting to make things better too, I was very happy with that. So he often, not always, but more often than not, he did some editing and of my programs, pauses and, you know, mistakes and dumb things and so on that you tend to say. And of course, Mike recorded my programs at that time, up for the first year and a half, I'd say, at least. He recorded, all my programs were pre-recorded, and he recorded them, and we, every week, and we all usually had a very cordial experience with all of that, and he was cordial to people. Except for these two times, but we got over it. You know, the second time he was acted like having to edit this special 2-hour program of mine so much, which I told him where to edit. So I did a lot of work on that too, but it did turn out to be quite a chore because it was several recording sessions put together. And, you know, it was, but he never said much at the time, but weeks and weeks later, he comes back at me with this, "Oh, what you know, what I had to do for you, and I spent all day doing that one program." And I said, "Oh, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, you didn't complain about it at the time." Anyway, we finally got over that, and another time I think we had a problem, he promised that he would, he was not posting my programs, and it was making me angry, like, for, if he doesn't do it right away, he doesn't do it. So I'm probably pushing ahead too much here, stuff I've got for later, so maybe I should stop. But we got over it, you know, and after we would get over our tiffs, and our complaints and resentments, we were fine again. You know, I mean, we found ourselves, because basically Mike Connor and I liked each other and we talked a lot. And of course, I know Mike Connor likes to talk, so he talks a lot to a lot of people, but he talked a lot to me too. And I said a lot of things to him. I was quite open with him. He said a lot of things to me. He seemed to be open with me. And I learned a lot about him, and same with him. We just it's just one of those things. We talked a lot on Skype, sometimes for an hour at a time, which I thought he should have been posting my show. But, you know, when you get into a conversation, sometimes you just don't want to stop because one thing leads to another. Anyway, going to my leaving of at Voice of Reason after all of this, what happened was that when I got my new website and I was able to post the programs, my programs, on my own website, then I wasn't upset anymore, really, about Mike not posting them, because this, you know, my show went live, and then that was a big change. And but still, what he was doing was he was posting. If he didn't post it that very night, and I would try to get him to post it that very night, it invariably was that it wouldn't get posted for a few days, if not a week or 2 weeks. I mean, that's the way this thing would go. So I was always trying to make him post it that very night. And after this, one of these last problems we had, he promised that even if he didn't post other people's show, he would post mine that night, because I wrote it. You know, he didn't have to write any of that stuff. I wrote it. I had the photograph and so on. And I send it to him already after the show. Sometimes it'd be like an hour afterwards or so. But he used to stop and do it right then. Then he stopped. He would say, well, I'll do it before the night's over. Don't worry, but I can't do it right now because I'm busy. And, you know, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. And the next day he wouldn't do it. And then he wouldn't answer you. See, this is the personality that we're dealing with here. But I'm going into my part two. Okay, let's get back with this. So, it's kind of necessary, because after I was able, thanks to Bill Fink, who I just had on the previous hour, I now had a website with all this podcast ability, and I learned how to do it, and I could post things there. And so I asked Mike for the MP3 after the show, and he sent it to me. And then I posted it at carolynyeager.com, and he did not post it on Voice of Reason. And that didn't work out too bad, because I started telling people that it was there, and I had more people coming to carolynyeager.com to listen to my program than I had coming before. So when Mike saw that I had been able to post it myself at my own network, my own website, the following week when I said, send me the MP3, he didn't. And he didn't send it for several days, and he didn't post it. And I was Skyping him every day. He said, send me that MP3. And he didn't respond at all. This is how he does. He just doesn't respond. I've been through this with him many times. And he doesn't answer emails either. I sent him some emails too. You know, I want that MP3. Finally, I sent him a Skype message that was kind of threatening. And I said, I want that MP3. I said, I didn't notice. I said, you're withholding from me my own creative, content. What is that called? You know, what I own. It's my, you know, it's my show. And I didn't notice that I ever got paid by Voice of Reason for providing it to you. And that's what did it, you know, because, he was withholding. And right away I heard back from him, and he said, oh, I'm sorry. He said, I'm not trying to withhold it from you. I just been very busy lately. He always would use that. He'd always say, I've been so busy. I'm so busy. But he sent it to me right then. See, he could have done it all along. So, I mean, this is just people's quirky personalities, but you could say. But so I posted it at CarolynYeager.com, and from then on, he always sent that MP3 to me. And since I had that and I could post it myself on my site, I really didn't care anymore that he wasn't posting it on VOR, because people were coming to me, and it also didn't make VOR look very good. And you know what? I thought, well, that's his business. And the other host didn't seem to mind. Once I wrote to several hosts to try to get them to do some concerted action about Mike, and nobody answered me. Not a single one that I wrote to. I didn't write to every one of them. And this was kind of early on, I think, after that first disappearance that he pulled in December, started in December 2010. But nobody responded. So I thought, well, you know, they don't care. I'm the only one that cares, so I won't bother them anymore. So I wanted to say that I determined after a while that because Mike wasn't posting things, and I was there was also changes. It was the changes in at VOR of what was being put as content, and I was informed that it was going to go, that Mike's plan for VOR, for making a big success of it, and he told me this himself. He informed me that it was, he wanted to, and he knew I wouldn't like it, he said, but he was going to try to get advertising to pay the bills, and then he'd be able to pay, he didn't need it to pay the bills, I mean, the bills were small, but he would be able to pay himself, and he'd be able to pay the hosts, he said. I always told him that I didn't need to be paid, and I didn't think the host should be paid, but if there was money, it should go to him, because he was the one working behind the scenes. You know, we all got the glory up front on our shows that he was working behind the scenes, and I thought he should be paid. But he never had the ability to push for donations to pay himself. I think, I don't know, I won't even bother going into that. But he was hesitant, I think, about maybe looking like he was trying to make money off it or something. He preferred to sit and cry about how he had to do everything. But anyway, so finally I was fed up. I couldn't stand it really anymore. I didn't want to be on Voice of Reason any longer. And because of the content and the changes they were going to make, and he said he was going to go more. Yeah, he told me he was going to go more toward the big tent. And I said, you know, I wanted to go the opposite direction. And we talked about that, and he knew how I felt. And I said, I think we should go in the opposite direction. I don't think this is going to be a success. But it was, I wasn't arguing hard. I was just giving my own thoughts and my advice in a kind of, you know, half-hearted way, because I knew it was up to him and he was going to do what he wanted. And I was just separating myself from the whole affair. And so, I got this idea of starting my own network, and I thought, who would do that with me? You know, how could I do that? And I had become kind of friendly, pretty friendly with Tan Stoffel, you know, over the past couple months, and through our just our common thinking. And then it occurred to me, I remembered that he was a computer person. So I thought I'd ask him. Well, I did ask him, and he said he'd think about it. And he thought about it, and he said he thought he knew I was totally unhappy at Voice of Reason. He knew why, and he wanted to keep my shows going. And he thought they were valuable, and he said, I will do this for you. But, you know, it took more time than I had thought in the beginning. But so I said, okay, and we decided we'll do this. So I told Mike that my last show would be May 15th, and this was around the end of March. And no, my last show was May 15th. I told Mike my last show would be April 24th. That was going to be my last show. I informed Mike. I said, Mike, I'm leaving. You know, I'm going to start my own. I didn't tell him where I was going. I said, I'm leaving Voice of Reason. And at the time, I can read to you what I wrote to him. And I'm not, I'm on the wrong page. I have to go back to the other page. I think it's worthwhile doing this. Okay, I said, this is around the end of March, 1st of April. I'm not sure I sent this to Mike. I may have just told him about it, but I wrote it up. It was in my emails. Anyway, I said, "Dear Mike, yes. Oh, I know. We had a real bad little scene." And he wrote to me. He said, if you leave, he said, "Why don't you just quit if you want to, if you're so unhappy here?" I had already wanted to leave. That's probably why I was being as critical as I was. And he says, "I won't have to listen to you anymore. Just leave." So the next day I wrote to him and I said, I thought that was a good pretext. So I said, "Yes, I am not happy at VOR. If anyone is aware of that, it's you. I had intended before our little exchange yesterday evening to give you advance notice that I would be leaving the network in hopes that we could have an amicable parting. That is still my intention. Since my future destination is not yet firmed up, my idea is to remain until the end of April, say, which would be 3 more Heretics Hour programs from me. That would give us both time to make a transition to the next step and hopefully avoid false rumors and negative talk about VOR. This is my firm decision. I will definitely follow through with 3 more programs up to and including April 30th, unless I hear otherwise from you." You know, leaving it open for him to say, "Well, leave now. I don't want any more programs from you. Sincerely, Carolyn." Well, then let me go back to where I was. You know, to that, he, I guess we started talking on Skype then, but he changed his tune a little bit, and he said he didn't think that what I thought I was going to do was a very good idea for me. I shouldn't leave or whatever, but if I want to leave, fine. And he said, "That's fine, you know." And so that was that. Then Tan Stoffel wanted me to be more upfront with him and tell him what we were going to do. And so Tan himself talked to Mike and told him what we were going to do. And I talked to Mike, and Mike was okay with it. He probably was taken a little back, but he was okay with it. And he was trying to convince Tan Stoffel to that it would never work. But we thought it would work. And besides, I was absolutely not going to stay at VOR any longer. So that's what I did. And so I gave him plenty of notice. And in fact, I ended up staying until May 15th. And he told me, he says, "If you want to stay longer than April 24th, you're welcome to do so." And he was still hoping that this plan we had would kind of run aground and I would stay on with the Heretics Hour. And he even offered Tan Stoffel a spot and I think he would have really liked that too. Mike would. He was hoping we would, this wouldn't work out and we would both become part of Voice of Reason. He didn't try to replace me. By this time he had this plan that he was going to move out of his apartment and save all that money, move in with a family member, and then really focus on the network and do all this stuff. And knowing what I knew about Mike Connor by then, I didn't think it was ever going to happen, and it didn't. But this is what he was telling everybody. So now I want to move on to, which I don't have hardly much time for. I can get rid of this page. To the second one. Boy, I'm talkative, aren't I? I'm really talkative. All right, the second, that's enough for number one. The second reason that people are giving is that Mike Connor burned out because he worked so hard. And I've heard people say Mike was working his fingers to the bone, you know, dedicated to this network, and he just burned out and just crashed. And then Carolyn didn't make it any better by all the things she said afterwards. Well, I'm going to tell you, I don't see it that way, and I don't think that's true. And I don't think that Mike Connor worked that hard. And I've said a lot that I was going to say in this number two already. I kind of got ahead of myself. So as far as I know, he never worked on weekends because he would say, "I'm going to get caught up this weekend," but nothing ever happened during the weekend as far as, you know, shows being posted and so on. Never happened on the weekend. So I don't think he worked on weekends. And he spent a lot of, I think I already talked about the talking. So he spent a lot of time on forums too. I'm not saying it wasn't work what he did, but he also, see, a lot of this I've already said, good. I will say that Mike is a person who drags his feet. Mike Connor, no matter what it was, he drug his feet with it. If anything could be put off, he wanted to put it off. He never wanted to do anything right away. And when I started my program there, I had to wait for like a month or almost 2 months from the time that he agreed to it to where I could start it. Because first I had to wait and be a guest on Tom Sunick's program, and which as though I had to try out or something. He had to see how I sounded and I handled it and so on. Whereas I'd already been on, didn't have my own program, but I'd already been a guest on many programs he could listen to. But no, I had to do that. And then there were other things that came up, which I won't go into. So, number three, I'm cutting that one short. Number three reason is that, and this is the most, probably the truest, but it still doesn't make sense, that Carolyn Yeager's programs, no, it's not the truest for what happened to Mike, but it's true as what made him mad, that my programs on the White Network were so destructive to Voice of Reason or to Mike Connor's state of mind that he understandably couldn't cope with it anymore and crashed or had a nervous breakdown. Now, I kind of brought this up earlier, that this doesn't say much. When people are saying this, it doesn't say much for the strength or whatever, or the foundations of Voice of Reason, and it doesn't say much for Mike Connor's state of mind. These people completely ignore the fact that the server crashed, that just when, Mike Connor hadn't actually done any of the things he said he was going to be doing, but at that time, the server crashed. And he may have been disillusioned by some people who were supposed to be on shows with him, like Matt Parrott and like maybe Mischko wasn't. Of course, Mischko didn't owe him anything, but Mischko had kind of come back, and that Mischko was going to participate some. But maybe he then said, well, he couldn't. I don't know. I'm speculating, too. But he could have been, you know, discouraged by several things. But when that server crashed and he said, well, we're going to buy a new one and it's going to be the best, you know, updated, all the latest stuff, and which he did. But what I've learned from the problems at Bill Fink when he had to move me to brand new servers, my site, my software on my server was not upgraded, was not up to the grade of these new servers, because he also bought, you know, the best servers that were available at the time, all high grade and so on. So this was Mike's problem with adjusting the Voice of Reason software to these new servers they bought. And he thought he could do it, but he ran into problems with particularly with live shows. And somebody had remarked that he had said that he had spent, and I know this sounds just like Mike, he had spent hundreds of hours perfecting the website and the programming and so on based on the software he was using that was brought in there in the beginning, I guess, by Dietrich and Mischko and whoever started that whole thing in the beginning. And I don't know if Peter Schenck was right there in the beginning and part of that. I'm not sure, but that's what Mike had always been working with, and now I understand now how tricky this can be, and you can't just Mike was not up to the task of solving some of these problems. He solved quite a few of them, I guess, but he couldn't solve the last one, and so the show wasn't going on. Finally, maybe he just gave up. I don't know what happened to him, but I would say that had nothing to do with my my programs on the White Network. That is not what contributed to it. What contributed to it, people say, well, that contributed to it. Well, if it did contribute to it, then it shows that Mike's staying power is kind of superficial. And everybody's staying power there was fairly superficial. So, you know, I'm going to I will just add this, that Voice of Reason was called Whitelandia, was going to be called Whitelandia. I have heard from others in the beginning, but some people there, of those who started it, thought that that was too white, I guess, that that would scare people away, and they voted for Voice of Reason. I think Whitelandia is a great name, and the fact is, it reminds you, and it tells you all the time, that it's about white people and white issues and white interests, whereas Voice of Reason doesn't, and Voice of Reason can change to just about any kind of philosophy, and it was doing so, in my opinion. Now, there is, okay. You know, after I did the program on the homosexual menace, and I do not apologize for anything in any of the programs I've done, including that one, even though it raised a big fuss, even though the people at Voice of Reason were totally shocked and upset by it. Now, why should they be? Ask yourself that. I ask myself that. Why should they mind if I do? Well, they say, well, it's because she mentioned Voice of Reason and said that Voice of Reason is a homosexual front or something. Well, I never said anything of the kind. But the point is that people were writing, obviously, to Mike Connor after that program. Some people were writing and saying, obviously to the effect of, you know, Carolyn Yeager's bringing up something real valid, and I haven't liked it myself, and why do you have those homosexuals on the shows, and why do you have, somebody wrote, why do you have the other non-whites on these shows, why do you have blacks on these shows, some shows, why are you doing this? I don't think this is what VOR should be doing. Well, Mike didn't like that because he was, well, he wouldn't like it anyway, but he was planning on going further in that direction, you see, not less. But there's also maybe some other reasons. But I will say that he sent out emails eventually to all these people, and some of these people sent it to me. So I know what he wrote to them, and it was very long and quite slanderous toward me. And he said some things that were not true, and these are the things I want to bring out. Before my time is up. So I have to go right to what they are. And in the first place, he said that he was my producer and benefactor for the first 2 years of doing radio. You know, I can't see Mike as my benefactor. I did a good radio program, the first one I did. It was well received. And I always did a good program, although some are better than others, but and I imagine I improved. I may be going the other direction now, but you know, to call himself, to insist that he was my, and he wasn't even my producer. I produced my own shows, but he recorded the shows. He didn't have anything to do with the content or getting the guests or doing any of it. I did all of that. So I was offering my work to Voice of Reason. And if he represented Voice of Reason, he was benefiting. But in essence, we were all working for the white cause. That's what we're supposed to be doing, and that's, I think, the way it was. So nobody was anybody's benefactor. But he says, he starts talking about homosexuality. And he says, if I may briefly address Yeager's preposterous homosexual menace claim. I do suspect there probably are a few homosexuals in the white nationalist closet, in addition to the very small number who are open. Okay, he suspects that there's a few in white nationalism. He says there are homosexuals everywhere, and there always have been. Well, that's what the pro-homosexual people like to say. And I would say, I won't say it. And then he says but there is no evidence that the white nationalist movement is on the verge of a homosexual takeover. I do not support the homosexual agenda at all, he says, but this homosexual menace stuff is just plain silly talk. Well, you know, he's writing to people, some of whom wrote to him and said that they agreed with the homosexual menace, but he's just writing to them and telling them that there's something wrong with me and that it's just plain silly. But now he gets real academic, and he says one should consider some of the possible side effects of Carolyn Yeager's homosexual menace alarmism. In order to inflate the perceived plausibility of the threat, Carolyn went to some lengths to insinuate that there are some people in the white nationalist movement who are homosexuals who have not come out of the closet. If she is wrong about these people, then she is guilty of spreading lies about others. If she is right about these people, then she is guilty of what the homosexual activists call outing. And he goes on to explain further. Outing people is their favorite tactic of homosexual, is a favorite tactic of homosexual political activists. They use outing as a means to pressure closeted homosexuals into supporting the homosexual agenda or to shame them for supporting heterosexual norms. And, you know, I say, now, why does Mike know all about this? And why does he write so much about this homosexual business? And that was the only part of what I was saying that he got upset about. And the rest of them, too, but especially Mike, was very, very, he always brought it up, the homosexual thing. So he goes on to say, how is this helpful for whites? If some homosexual is endeavoring to stay in the closet and not attempting to advance the homosexual cause, I personally do not see any advantage in outing him, even if he is in the white nationalist cause, perhaps especially if he is in the white nationalist cause. Let him stay in the closet if he can. In other words, Carolyn is either slandering as homosexuals, pro-white individuals who have never attacked her, or inadvertently doing her best to advance the same homosexual political movement that she pretends to oppose. Well, can you follow that kind of, complicated reasoning? I don't think that's a good conclusion that he comes to. I'm simply writing about the homosexual reality in some parts of white nationalism, and he doesn't want it to be talked about. Why not? You know, and why does all of the I've got 60 seconds, looks like. Okay, so I have to bring this to a close, ladies and gentlemen. And he also accused me of, I have to bring this up, privately displaying a seething petty jealousy of Tom Sunic, who has never attacked her or anyone. Well, you know, I criticize Tom Sunic as a radio host, but I have no seething petty jealousy, and I've never been jealous of him. And Mike knows that, but he's just decided to bring that in because I did like to kind of make fun of Tom Sunic with him at times, and so now he's using that and saying that he knows these things. And he also said that he knows a lot about me and has a lot of information about me, but he never says what it is except these things that he mentioned here. So. My idea then, what's going on here? I have to take a look. Before I run out of time altogether.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.